hat. I'm Chris.
Welcome to Canada Shorts. I'm Nathan.
And we're back.
Again.
For a variety of reasons, we've been gone for quite a long time. And now I'm going to take a bold stance and, you know, be like The Rock and say that we, period, will, period, never, period, leave, period, again, period.
That was easy to say now. Impressive. That was...
Thank you. That, I went into that with absolutely no forethought. Who would have guessed?
Nice. Well done.
Thank you.
Moderately impressed.
All right. So it's been a really long time. All right. Well, it's been a long time since me and you have talked in this manner.
It's been even longer.
Yeah, it's been even longer for our fans because there is a lost episode out there somewhere.
Oh, right. Because Joel's computer.
Yeah, we had some technical difficulties, and so no one really got to hear our Super Bowl special.
That's really disappointing. That was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. It was fun. It was sports, so we'll probably revisit it at some point. But to kind of go on the heels of that, today we're going to be talking about the Chicago Cubs curse. Now, before we get into that, you know, it has been a while, and this is really just a podcast about, you know, two dudes. So, you know, Nathan, how you been, man?
I've been good. Finally got a job.
Nice.
Things are looking good. I might be going back to school. I'm going to be the first person to ever get a liberal arts degree and do something useful with it. I'm going to become a librarian.
I mean, to be honest with you, I kind of always wanted to be a librarian, like a little secret side of me.
Yeah.
You know, it would just be one of those things where, like, that would be a really good job, I think.
Well,
but, you know,
it's 6 years of schooling, so
that's the part where I was just like, no,
because
no,
like,
why do you need 6 years of school?
You need 4 years of an undergrad degree that can be anything you want. So I'm going to take a literature degree, totally going to get made fun of for 4 years. And then a 2-year master's degree in library studies, so that'll be cool.
Not bad, not bad.
But 6 years of schooling.
Yeah, that doesn't sound very appealing. But you know, if that's what you want to do, then you know. Yeah.
But yeah, that's really it for me. What about you? What have you been up to?
Work mostly. Me and Joel have some things that are, you know, behind the scenes stuff that we're hopefully wanting to roll out to everybody here in the near future. Personally, I've just been working. I finished my second act of that script.
I saw that on Facebook yesterday. I was very happy for you.
So hopefully I'm going to kind of get the wheels turning on that. Other than that, I got a new roommate.
Oh, nice.
From Fayetteville. Even though he went back to Fayetteville and, you know, to work on his car. So, Ed, I know you're a listener of this. Just hurry up and get back, dude.
He misses you with all of his heart. He needs you in his life.
I miss his rent check.
Oh, yeah, I'd miss his rent check, too.
So, yeah, that's pretty much it for me. I know it's exciting. Woo.
Yeah,
I got a new couch.
Oh, sweet! Yeah. I dibs sleeping on that one.
There you go.
We're just gonna leave it at that. We're not gonna say anything about that for now.
No, not at all. Why would we? Why would we? Screw them.
Yeah. All right.
Screw the audience. This is me and you, buddy. Me and
who
you.
Needs the listeners?
Exactly.
They're not important. That's why we've been gone for like 2 months.
Exactly. That's our marketing campaign.
Screw the listeners.
Hat shorts, screw the audience.
Can we make that's that our new tag? Yeah, our tagline.
Well, in that spirit, we move forward. Okay, so this week, Chicago Cubs curse.
You changed suddenly. Okay, originally I remember you saying this was like the goat curse, and I'm hoping...
It's the same thing.
Okay,
it's the
all
same
right.
Thing. Yeah.
Because I'm sincere. I know nothing about this. Chris wanted me to... download a movie.
That was your homework assignment. It was an ESPN documentary that they did, I want to say, about a year and a half ago, I believe. It was called Catching Hell. It was the focus on an event that happened in the World Series, or not the World Series, but the playoffs back in 2003, I believe. A fan interaction kind of caused him to be, you know, demonized through the entire city. And, you know, it also touched on various other curses. The original goat curse for the Chicago Cubs talked about a little bit of the Red Sox curse that they had for a while.
Yeah,
it was a really interesting documentary, and I thought it was one of those things where it brought in fans that were sitting next to the guy, and how much their reactions, how much they've changed since then, and also once they see the video and they see their own reactions, and they kind of, you know, take inventory on why they would do that, and, you know, did he really deserve to be treated that way?
Interesting. So yeah, I was supposed to watch this. I downloaded it, right, and then it just disappeared off my hard drive. It's like a curse or something. So I'm going into this completely blind and hoping that the Chicago goat curse has something to do with sacrificing a goat on an altar at the World Series on the infield. I'm hoping it has something to do with that.
Close.
Okay, all right.
Just for our listeners, if you do want to watch this, it is on Netflix here in the States. I'm not sure if it's on Netflix in Canada, because I know those two differ for some reason. But it's definitely worth checking in to. It's like I'm not really big into documentaries, but that one really, really was good. So let's go ahead and start with the goat curse.
All right, let's sacrifice these
first
goats.
The Cubs have not won a World Series since 1908.
That's really impressive. Did they get an award for that? Like,
I guess, but that's 105 years.
That's
dry
crazy.
Spell. They haven't even gone to the World Series since 1945.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and 1945 is the year that the goat curse comes into to play. I pulled up a few things online. Let's see.
If it's from Wikipedia, it's not an actual resource.
Oh, whatever. The curse of the Billy Goat was allegedly laid upon the Cubs when P.K. Ridley, the owner of the stadium at the time, ejected Billy Sionis, who came to Game 4 of that year's World Series with two box seat tickets, one for him and one for his pet goat. They paraded around the I know. A lot of people, like, they claim to know, you know, why his whole background was. Some say it was his lucky goat. Some people said, you know, he owned, like, a bar or something and it was named after him, or I don't know.
I wonder if the pet money down that we have on this apartment that I'm in counts for goats.
Sure.
I should look into that, see if I can get a goat. Just carry it around with me wherever I go.
Anyway, the owner demanded that the goat leave the park because of the odor. And when he got ejected, Mr. Sionis, he basically exclaimed, "The Cubs, they ain't gonna win no more." And then they lost Game 4 and lost the World Series, and they haven't been back to the World Series since then.
Because...
Right. And see, here's the thing, like, and a lot of people, like, oh, you know, it's just a dumb goat. They just, you know, the Cubs, they just haven't had any good teams. And that's not the case. Like, there was, 1969 was one of the best years they ever had, probably the best team that they've ever had. And they just collapsed, right? Like, they collapsed, what was it? They lost 17 and a half games in the standings in the last quarter of that season after starting off incredibly well. Same thing with, 1984, I believe they went to the playoffs and just sputtered out completely.
That's messed up. That is...
Right. And in between those years, essentially, the Cubs were the, quote, lovable losers. You know, people loved them. We didn't really care if they won, you know, whatever. We're just here to have a good old time kind of environment. and which is why they called, you know, Wrigley Field the friendly confines of Wrigley Field. Yeah. Let's see.
It's a nice name.
Right. 2003, they made it to the National League Championship Series, and that's when the whole Bartman thing happened, but we'll get back into that later. And they, you know, they were up three games to two, and then they lost the series. Yeah, you know, they lost two straight games. And then 2007, 2008, they were those years. That's when
I like how
up,
you're like, audibly like enraged about this.
Oh, I know. And I mean, I'm a 25-year-old Cubs fan who, you know, is the son of a 54-year-old Cubs fan. You know,
oh,
and so that
okay.
is that kind of, you know, my dad was raised in Illinois, been a Cubs fan his entire life, passed it down to me, and none of us has seen anything happen with the Cubs. 2007, 2008, we brought in Lou Piniella to be the coach, you know, legendary baseball player, legendary manager. We brought in a bunch of talent. We, you know, I say we. I had nothing to do with it.
Are you
know,
sure you weren't there for the contract signing? That's in spirit, at least.
Probably in spirit. Those were great years during the season for us. And then in the first round of the playoffs, lost four straight games and were eliminated. Our star player, like Alfonso Soriano, I think in those two playoff series, for like his batting average was... dear Lord, it was really, really bad. I think he went like 2 for 16.
Wow.
Or something like that. No, and then I think he pretty much had the same, I think he had the same for the next year after that. So essentially he was like 4 for 32, and just the entire team just was terrible by the time the playoffs came. And since then, I don't think we've been back to the playoffs since that time. So, that's essentially the short history of the Cubs. Now for the weird stuff, other than the goat curse.
It gets weirder than a man saying, Cubs ain't gonna win no more. Like...
Yeah, yes. The Steve Bartman...
Exciting.
The Steve Bartman thing, okay? It was a game in Chicago. And again, this is... If you watch the documentary, all this... You see this entire thing play out. In a very well edited form, it's game six of that series against the Florida Marlins. They're up 3-2. They just crushed the Florida Marlins in Florida. The previous games before that, they're back in Chicago, dominating the game the entire time. Mark Pryor at the time, we had probably the best pitching staff. Probably ever that year. Mark Pryor, a very young but amazing pitcher at the time, he was pitching a hell of a game. And I believe it was the eighth inning. Yeah, because it was that time where people were like, you know, six more outs to go, and they were going to the World Series, and then they got to five outs. And the funny thing was, and they point this out in the documentary, during the seventh inning stretch, you know... You're a big baseball fan, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You know the 17th inning stretch, they come out to sing, you know, take me out to the ball game.
Yeah.
Everyone gets up and, you know, sings along. Well, that night we had the comedian, the late Bernie Mac. He came out and, you know, we get to the line where, you know, and root. And when you're in Chicago, they go root for the Cubbies.
Wow, that's a stretch to make it fit into the song.
I know. This time, though, he was like, and root for the champs. And everyone was like, why did he just say that? He just doomed us. Like, that's the mindset of a Chicago Cubs fan. Like, as soon as he says that, it's like, we're winning. I think they were winning, like, 3-0 at that time of the game with, like, two innings left. Or 2.5 innings, I should say. And everyone, as soon as he did that, everyone was like, no, he didn't. Why did he just do that? He just killed us. Like, that kind of panic happened. And then, you know, people, you know, they got through the seventh inning, fine, no big problem. Get to the eighth inning, and I want to say they had one out, and I think there was two outs left. I forgot who the player was, but he hits a pop fly ball. down the left foul line. And if you know Wrigley Field, the further down the foul line you get, the closer the closer the fans are, essentially.
Okay.
And it's just right down the line, and it kind of comes down just over the rail. A bunch of fans reach out for the ball because, you know, a ball's coming towards them. It's a big game. Everyone's going to want to get the ball. And there's one fan in particular who actually makes contact with it, and that is Steve Bartman. He hits the ball. What he doesn't realize is that our left fielder at the time, Moises Salou, he jumped the wall, and his glove was right underneath Steve Bartman's.
Oh, no.
So he wasn't able to make the catch. We didn't get the out. The crowd just unleashes on this fan. We're talking, like, anything that they have their hands on, they throw it at him.
Oh,
from, like, the top of the bleachers, everything.
That's
beer,
so...
hot dogs, sausage, pizza,
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, they were throwing sausage. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Terrible.
They did interviews from guys, from people who came down and heckled them. And most of them were like, yeah, I was a little too drunk. And they come down and they yell at them. The entire crowd. And see, the thing is, the way Wrigley Field is, outside of the stadium, there's just like one street. And then there's all these buildings and houses and stuff. That entire street was flooded with people. Like, they shut down traffic because everyone was that excited about this game. And there was one guy who was standing at the front of that crowd outside who just had, like, this portable television that he was holding over his head so people could actually kind of see the game. And those are the people...
All I picture is this old car and a guy in a trench coat holding the television over his head.
That's essentially what it was, yeah. So those are the people that saw the replay. They saw that, you know, Steve Bartman was the guy. People were just angry in the stadium, but they didn't really... At the time, they didn't know exactly who. And it was through those people that they heard chants coming from outside the stadium, and then everyone else started joining in. Everyone was chanting A-hole, but they weren't saying A. Like, you know...
The things,
like,
we do to not get an explicit tag.
I know. And just, like, people were laying into him. People were throwing stuff at him. Security had to come in. And see, it just got worse because during that inning, the Cubs gave up 8 runs in that inning. Right after that, there was a guy that was a ground ball straight to the shortstop, who was I think he was a Gold Glove contender that year. So he hardly ever made mistakes, and he just completely whiffed on a surefire double play that would have gotten him out of the inning. And after that, the Marlins just unloaded, just hit after hit after hit, and they scored 8 runs in that one inning. And with every run, the crowd just got louder and more angry at that fan. Not at anyone, because there was plenty of mistakes made by Mark Pryor. He was starting to pitch horribly.
Have you seen this game? Did you watch it on TV, or did you watch it? Have you watched it online since then, or? Were you at this game? You look really angry.
I wasn't at the game. I watched it.
Okay.
I watched it. It was 2003. I had to have been like a freshman or sophomore, grade 9 for you.
Okay.
Grade 9 or 10. And it was intense, dude, even watching it. And it didn't help that Fox Sports, they kept showing that same replay, and they kept doing close-ups of the guy.
How did they get his name? Just people who knew him?
They didn't know. They didn't know.
Okay.
And this is, they talk about this in the documentary. The security comes, they help Steve Bartman out, they put him in like a room in the stadium, just kind of hide out, and then after the game ends, and the entire thing, Steve Bartman just didn't yell at anyone. He didn't do anything. He felt bad. He was just this kid in this... he was a peewee baseball coach. And he had their sweater on.
Oh.
And like a turtleneck. And he had a Cubs hat, glasses, and he had a Walkman headset on. And everyone was like standing around him, and he was just in his seat just looking incredibly sad. He He didn't say anything to no one. He didn't yell back at anybody. And, you know, they took him out for his own safety. And then after the game finished, they got footage of other people, you know, catching video footage of him walking, them escorting him to a room inside the stadium. And it was incredibly nuts. Like, people were chasing after him. People were like, he tried to hold his jacket over his face. People were like pulling that down. And then after they had him in that room, afterwards they tried to disguise him as a security staff just to get him out of the room. They were trying to like walk with him down the street to find him a cab or something. People noticed him and they like ducked into one of the security people's apartment, had a hideout there for a little while. Then eventually they got him a cab and he went home. And pretty much that's the last time anyone's seen the guy.
No, wow. Disappeared.
The day after, yeah. The day after, some of the news organizations just thought it would be a good, just kind of human interest story. Be like, oh, what's up with this guy? And then they found out what he does. I don't know how, but I guess they just, you know, did a lot of research. They found out, you know, what he does, where he works. They found his home. It was in, like, the suburbs, and there was a baseball field in his backyard.
Wow.
Like, yeah.
This
like,
man
it was,
is
like,
dedicated.
It was, like, you know, a pretty, you know, raggedy-looking, you know, baseball field.
Still, that's like, kind of awesome.
Right. And they camped out, and eventually they found out his name. And when they found out his name, that's where it was just all over every sports news show. It was all over SportsCenter. It was all over WGN.
There's a difference between being a nice, interesting human interest story to being a little stalkerish and just
right.
creepy.
Absolutely. And the thing was, that wasn't even the last game. They still had another game like 2 nights later. I think it was 2 nights later, it might have been the next night, but all anyone wanted to talk about was Steve Bartman and what he did. And even going into that game, like, Chicago Cubs fans just weren't having it. You know, they just weren't into it. They ended up, it wasn't that, I think they, it was a close game from what I understand, but they ended up losing it. And that just made people more angry, and, you know, he got just hate mail after hate mail and death threats and all that stuff, and he's essentially kept out of the public eye. He even, like, he released a statement that his brother, I think his brother-in-law, read for the news place or the news organizations, and that statement is just heartbreaking. He apologizes to, like, Cubs fan everywhere. He apologizes to the Cubs organization. He apologizes to former Cubs from, like, the 60s and the 80s. Like, I'm sorry for Ron Santo. I'm sorry to Ron Santo. I'm sorry for Ryan Sandberg. And I'm like, this, you know, please accept my heartfelt apologies from this broken-hearted Cubs fan. And I'm like, oh, dude. Oh, like, in that moment, I've started feeling like, oh, God, I kind of feel bad for this guy. And, you know, and it's one of those things where they talk about, you know, other people that have screwed things up that got under scrutiny from a lot of fans and the toll it took on others. He talked about, who was that Red Sox player? I can't think of his name. But he was the guy who was on first base in like their World Series in the 80s against the Mets. And there was a line or a ground ball coming straight for him, and he bent down to pick it up as it was coming towards him, and it just went right between his legs. And then they lost the game. Yeah. And he was demonized and threatened for years, and they never forgave him until the Red Sox finally won a World Series. Matter of fact, he didn't. And after they won the World Series, they started inviting him to, you know, oh, you should come throw the first pitch, you know, out here for our season opener. And he was like, no. And he wouldn't do it until they won a second World Series. Then he was finally like, okay, I feel comfortable coming out to the public again.
See, here I am sitting in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically in Canada, not in any one area. I sit right. in Canada.
It's a large seat.
It's a really big seat. The only ass big enough to fill it is William Shatner. Anyway, I'm sitting here, And I'm thinking, man, I've heard so many stories about crazy football fans in America being, like, crazy football fanatics and insane about football. And I'm like, you Cubs fans, I haven't heard half of these stories for, like, football.
And see, the thing is, that's the part of the irony of it, is that this was at the quote-unquote friendly confines of Wrigley. I've been to Wrigley. I went to a game back in 2005, a couple years after that, and even like I noticed people who were fans of the opposing team, they were still pretty, you know, cordial to them. They were still nice. They yelled a few jabs at each other, but nothing too, you know, horrible. Just, you know, friendly
banter.
You know, ribbing. Yeah, friendly banter back and forth, and that's the way it's always been. But just that one night, it just everything, like 100 years worth of anger just showed its ugly face on national television.
All of the angst possible just bared down on this one poor guy.
Absolutely. Other than like that one night, Cubs fans are just the friendliest people, you know. And it was just, it's just so weird. And there's been some weird things that happened since then. Because, you know, you're like, oh, well, you know, the Cubs have plenty of chances since then. And you're absolutely right. Let's see. I should look at Mark Pryor's injuries, for one. The guy that was pitching that night, he's had a history of the absolute weirdest injuries. But, in general, let's see. Sammy Sosa, you know Sammy
yes.
Sosa, right? All right. There was one time he was on the disabled list, which is, I think, 15 days. 15 days injured reserve with back spasms after he sneezed. And all these injuries, I think, were... Most of them were in, like, the 2005-2006 seasons, I believe. Let's see. Going on to the next one. That same season, Kerry Wood, a pitcher, injured his back while slipping in his hot tub. This was like decades ago, but Jose Cardinal couldn't play one day because he said his eyelids were swollen shut when he woke up. I think that was like 80s, 70s, I think.
I'm just at a loss.
In 2005, Carlos Zambrano, one of our best pitchers at the time, suffered an elbow injury. The Cubs said it was spending too much time on his laptop, and he said the injury happened when he was emailing his brother in Venezuela.
Emailing.
That's what he told us. This was a couple years ago. Our star player, Alfonso Soriano, strained a calf muscle while hopping during a catch, although he denied that the two were related. Anyone who knows Alfonso Soriano, he's really bad defensively. And anytime a ball comes his way, right before he makes the catch, he does this weird little hop right before the ball hits his glove. He did that one time and strained his calf, and he denies it to this day that the two were ever related. That the injury, and yeah. Mike Harkey, he was once our pitcher for us, injured his knee while trying to do a cartwheel on the field before a game. Our relief pitcher Kyle Farnsworth injured a knee after kicking an electric fan in the tunnel between the clubhouse and the dugout.
That makes me really happy.
Steve Trout went on the disabled list after falling off an exercise bike.
Exercise is dangerous. It's just not good for you.
Yeah, I remember
sports
this one.
Sports and exercise are just bad. I'm not sure if I'm excited to hear this or not. The look on your face right now.
Cubs outfielder a couple years ago, his name was Felix P.A.
Okay.
His last name is spelled Pi, but it's pronounced P.A. He's an incredibly fast runner. So fast that in spring training one year, he twisted a testicle and had testicular torsion.
What? How do you do that?
Essentially, what happens there is nerves and blood vessels get kind of tangled, and the only way to fix it is to disconnect it from those blood vessels and nerves and kind of straighten everything out and then reattach it. Sometimes you can't always reattach it. There's been dudes that have lost one because of it. Thankfully, and see, the thing was, he played like a good month and a half with that. And it wasn't until like the pain got too much to where he had to be put on the disabled list to get the surgery. But he played with it for like a month and a half.
I feel uncomfortable right now. Like, just, oh.
Oh, yeah, I know.
My manhood hurts.
Oh, Derek Lee. Derek Lee is probably my favorite Cubs player ever. He injured his back in 2010 when a chair he was sitting in collapsed. I know. Mike Ringlinger. He sprained his pinky finger when he got it caught between two recliners while relaxing in the Cubs clubhouse. Most of those, like I said, have happened since 2003. It was... Yeah, it's like all of a sudden, if you get signed by the Cubs, all of a sudden you just become brittle. And all you are just incredibly bad luck.
And your testicles just are destroyed.
Twisted.
Your testicular fortitude is gone.
Right. Oh, dear Lord. And Mark Pryor himself, that it was, he was the pitcher who was on the mound the night of the night that the Bartman ordeal happened. He missed the first 2 months of the 2004 season due to an Achilles tendon injury. He missed almost the entire 2005 season because he was hit in the elbow by a line drive that was 117 miles an hour, like straight to the elbow.
Oh,
elbow.
Man.
Had a compression fracture. All that happened. Yeah.
Wow, that just seems really uncomfortable.
Right, and he's just had injury. Like, it's too long to really name, but essentially every season since 2003, he has had just injury after injury after injury. Even now, he's still trying to get back in baseball, but I don't know if that'll ever happen, just because his elbow just seems to be completely destroyed.
That's just
ever since that game, essentially.
The Cubs just are not good for your health.
They're really not.
It's just
they really are not. And is the thing is, like, the Cubs weren't, well, for a while, the Cubs weren't even the only team that had, or the only Chicago baseball team that had a curse. The Black Sox, they were considered just as badly cursed.
How many baseball teams does Chicago have?
Just those two.
Okay.
Let's see. 1919, the Black Sox scandal. They were in the middle of being in the World Series. And then, I want to say... Eight members of the Chicago White Sox were banned for life in the middle of the World Series. And these were, like, key players because they were... found out that they were intentionally losing games for betting reasons. And so they went from that point until 2005 without a World Series.
Wow.
You know. And then they won, and I was like, oh, that means the Cubs, they get to, you know.
No.
And
no,
even
doesn't.
With the Boston Red Sox, that was probably, like, for a while, the most famous curse, the curse of the Bambino.
Yes.
You've definitely heard of that one. And then they won two World Series, and I'm like, okay, the Cubs are next. No.
Nope.
No. Nope. Matter of fact, that season, that playoffs that in 2003, that same year, the Red Sox were playing the Yankees, and they looked like they were going to take it. And then all of a sudden, they collapsed too. Like, for like a brief second, we thought the World Series was going to be the cursed Chicago Cubs versus the cursed Boston Red Sox. That would have been an amazing World Series.
That would have been a cool World Series.
But both teams collapsed, and we got the Florida Marlins beating the Yankees. Yeah, yeah.
On a completely like tangent topic, is it bad that I just realized that the dad from Finding Nemo is named after another fish. He's a clownfish named Marlin.
I never even thought of that.
Yeah, no, me neither.
Again,
I'm
not a big Finding Nemo fan, so I never...
My friend Zach, that movie is like his religion or something. At least when he lived here, he moved to the west, east coast, but like, that movie, he was all about that movie, so... Anyway, yeah, Marlin, clownfish. Sorry, I don't...
Fair enough. No, it's all good.
Hi, Zach, if you're listening.
Hi, Zach. So that's essentially... I mean, then and it just seems like it's not that fun to be a Chicago sports fan. You know, we got the Blackhawks, the hockey team, but they had a quote-unquote curse.
I was about to ask, does Chicago even have a hockey team? Because I can't even think of the team name.
Blackhawks.
Yeah.
Actually, they were on a complete tear this season.
Yeah.
They went 21, 22 straight games without losing in regulation.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they blew the record out of the water.
So they're looking pretty good for the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, they are, and they won the Stanley Cup back in 2010.
Yes, they did.
So their curse is over. I remember I watched that game and I felt like such a loser because first of all, their captain Jonathan Toews is like a year younger than me, and I'm like, he's already the captain of an NHL team. I was sitting in summer classes at college, not really doing much, and then you know the Stanley Cup winning goal was by Patrick Kane, and he's just as young. And I'm like, this guy just won his team the Stanley Cup, and I'm doing nothing. And I'm the same age.
I want our two teams to have to face each other for the Stanley Cup one year. Detroit.
Your team is
Detroit. Yeah, I think.
We would face in the Western Conference.
Yes. Yeah, but it for the end in the be all end all, if it ended up being those two, that'd be fun.
Oh, in the Western Conference, yeah, it would be a lot of fun.
Because then we could have little friendly.
We could. But yeah, we went like 40-some years with a quote-unquote curse. I read up on the curse, and it didn't really sound like a curse. It sounded like something that the media kind of like drummed up just because, you know, oh, they're in Chicago, so they must be cursed.
Clearly. Anyone from Chicago has a curse. Come on.
Although I'm surprised no one has made up any theories about the Chicago Bears, the football team. Because it's been a while. We last won in 1985. Now, 1985, was an amazing team, probably, and they're still considered the best defense of all time.
So what we're saying is me and you need to start a curse for the Bears.
No, we really don't have to.
No, I think we should. I think we should create a curse name right now.
We really don't have to. But see, that's the thing. Like, there's no like one event that you've heard of since then that... you know, that made you consider that that maybe there is a curse. Like, we haven't heard, like, any weird stories of, you know, people bringing animals to games or, you know, no big fire.
I'm going to bring my pet tiger shark to a game, and I'm going to do something. I don't have a tiger shark. I wish I had. That'd be awesome.
That would be kind of awesome.
Does CM Punk have a curse? Does he have any sort of... He's from Chicago.
He had a longest championship reign, though.
He's got to have something.
I mean, maybe he had
him.
A curse before then, before his big, you know, promo or whatever, because he didn't really seem to do much before then.
Hey, whoa, watch your mouth.
He did a few things, but you know, we both know like his level of success, you know, drastically changed that night. So come on.
Maybe it's a blessing. Maybe he's the one good thing Chicago has going for them.
Now you see why everyone went so crazy at that Money in the Bank pay-per-view.
Yeah,
that's the thing, like. When Chicago embraces somebody, they embrace it to the point where they almost choke it to death.
It's great. I love it. I love seeing him.
Oh, yeah.
I love seeing him in Chicago. It's wonderful.
It's amazing.
Because no one
thing.
Boos
Chicago,
him. No one.
Chicago fans are so dedicated about their team, their local people.
Yeah,
like
that's
my favorite.
Awesome.
My favorite thing ever is watching a Blackhawks game where they bring out this guy who always sings the national anthem. He's like. I forgot what it was, but he had something wrong with his throat where he thought he never would sing again. And then all of a sudden he healed up and he became the guy that sang the national anthem for the Blackhawks. He sings it, and there's somebody on the organ playing behind him. And, you know, when most people have the national anthem playing, everyone's very quiet, you know, hand on their chest, hand on their heart, or saluting or whatever, and they're all very reverent, very quiet, and then they'll cheer after everything's done. Not Chicago, man. They cheer throughout the entire national anthem, and it's the best thing. Oh, it's one of those things where it's like, I'm not like one of those super patriotic people, but at that moment, I'm like, USA! You know? It's just, it's awesome, and it's one of those things where I'm surprised more places haven't really done that, because, like, come on, if you're anywhat patriotic, you would think the one time you would cheer that loudly would be for your nation's national anthem. You would think.
I think it's more of a thing of reverence for...
Well, yeah, there's that, but there's also, like, you know, hey, this is pretty awesome.
To be fair, you're also at a sporting event.
Let's give them applause.
You're also, at a sporting event.
Also at a sporting event, and everyone's probably drunk, but that's, you know, still, it's
wow,
it's
drunk really before nice. The national anthem hits. That's impressive.
I'm assuming people pregame. I don't know. I don't drink.
Instead of a pregame pee, pregame poop. It's a pregame drink. No, you don't. You don't.
Is
know.
That a Canada thing?
I don't know if it's a Canada thing. I think it's my cousin.
Or you're just you're revealing a lot about yourself.
I'm revealing a lot about my cousin Dallin. He always had this.
Cousin.
Actually, I think it might be it might just be a Sherwood Park thing where I'm from, because a lot of the time, like in what are you looking at me like that for?
Nothing. Go on.
A lot of the time in like sports or in gym class, before we'd start something, a bunch of my friends would be like, "All right, it's time for PGP, I'm like, what? The first few times I heard this, I'm like, what's a PGP? They're like, it's time for a pregame poop, Nathan. And I'm like, what?
I mean, I understand, like, you're wanting to, you know, get all that out of the way so you're not interrupted by it later in the game.
Yeah, I guess,
understand that.
It's pregame
poop. Making
a
tradition out of it, I just feel like it's one of those things that's just like, it's like an unspoken understanding that this, you know, let's get this done with.
Not in Sherwood Park, it's not in Sherwood Park, it's a ritual.
Like, because I'm going to... Like,
I wouldn't know. I was never on a sports team. I was always picked last in sports. Except for one time, when I played curling. Because curling, yes.
Was that, like, an actual, like, school, like, PE activity
or
something?
Yeah, we went curling.
I'm so jealous!
In grade 10, because that was the only year in high school I took gym. Because gym. Yeah, we went curling. And I think we did it for 4 days. And
did you guys have, like, actual, like, access to a ice rink?
Yeah. In a place called Glen Allen Rec Center, there's four or five lanes to play on. But, yeah, so we went, and everyone on the bus ride over is like, oh, great, another sport we can make fun of Nathan at. And I'm sitting there being like, yep. Yeah, all you football jocks, just, yep. Yeah. So we get there, and everyone's learning how to throw stuff and throw rocks, and they're throwing them, like, as hard as they can, and they're either,
right,
like, not making it far enough, or, like, hitting the backboard, and I'm just sitting there being like, all right, it's my turn, and I get it, and I'm just like, yeah, it was a beautiful shot, and I walk off, and then first time ever, for those lovely 3 days, I had been picked first, they're like, we want Nathan on our team, this is happening. I'm like, yeah, you do.
I'm so jealous that we got to
curl?
Do curling.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't get to curl back when I was in high school. Ugh. We barely played, like street hockey.
Oh, really? That's depressing.
Well, not even street hockey. Like,
we
played boot hockey.
We had this game in junior high. In our gym, we had the gym, and then there was the two change rooms on the side, and branching out from those change rooms are steps that go upstairs, and there's another, like, room up above the gym. Mm-hmm. And we'd set up mats and hockey nets, but tip them over so that the bottom part could get things into them, and we'd play crab handball. Handball on our hands and knees.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
we had
so much fun.
Well, we played it was like crab ball, or crab soccer, essentially. Essentially, it's the same thing.
Okay. Or we'd, like, set up those, you know, those stupid blue mats that all gyms seem to have. Right. We'd set them up in, like, intricate mazes, and we'd play laser tag, except with handballs. And we'd just crouch behind and, like, snipe at people.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
I really wish we did that. Gym would be so much more awesome if we did that. But no, we played, like, you know, basketball or football. And I'm like, you know, come on, we can play that at any time. Let's do something interesting.
It was either that or, what's that game?
We played a lot of dodgeball.
Broomball.
Too.
We played a lot of broomball.
Broomball?
I guess it's just a Canadian thing. It's a stick. And then it has, like, a plastic paddle on the end that's kind of the thing of, it kind of looks in this shape like a wire broom.
And like the kind of broom that you would use in curling.
Not really, because they use those sponge brooms now, kind of, for curling. Anyway, but yeah, I guess it kind of is
close
shaped like that,
dude.
But it's
come
a plastic
on.
Paddle.
Give me points for knowing that much.
It's kind of like shaped like a plastic paddle, and you use that and a round, hard rubber ball. And it was hockey, except with that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, like, because I was thinking, like, actual, like, brooms and stuff, and I'm like, it's hockey with brooms.
Pretty much. It's hockey with hard plastic brooms that you can beat each other with.
Oh, those are always fun.
Yeah.
Any game that you can beat each other with.
I love beating on each other. It's good times. Fighting was totally legal in crab handball. We just get into fights and it'd be beautiful.
I wish. But no, everyone's
as long as there
behavior.
Was no blood drawn, Mr. Van Drunen did not give a crap.
So jealous.
Yeah.
So freaking jealous. It was one of those things where, like, I mean, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, PE's terrible. PE's, you know, just you're picking on the weak kids. But to be honest with you, like, because of that class, like, I took it my freshman year in high school. Because of that, that was probably the best shape I've ever been in.
Yeah.
Because I had that, and essentially what we would do is, like, they would make you run. And if you tried to walk at any point, they would get on you big time. You had to run, like, for a set number of times straight. And so that helped cardio. And then on top of that, I was also doing marching band, like, after school. And it was, like, early fall, but it was still really, really hot. So that on top of those things.
I just heard your accent.
My accent? What are you talking about?
You said fall. And you said
fall?
It with a bit of... Oh, there it is again.
Fall?
Oh.
How is it supposed to sound? Like
fall? Like falling? Fall. You're saying fall.
Fall. Is that... okay, is that like the one thing I say with a southern
accent?
That
is the first time I've ever heard you have an accent at all. That was
fall.
Wondrous.
Whatever. Again, like, we're going to do a... an episode where we just talk about the South.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
A friend of mine wants to join.
I'd love to.
She has a pretty heavy Southern accent, so you'll be able to definitely hear it.
That's cool. I'm a fan of Southern accents. They're kind of one of my favorites.
If you say so, man. It's one of those... Well, I mean, I'm okay
I said
with
the
it.
Accent, not the people.
I know what you're saying. I know. And that's exactly
no
what I'm
offense
about.
To anyone who's listening that has an accent, and...
it's like
I got
that's like everyone,
crap.
Everyone that I have contact with. So you're fine. No. I understand what you're saying. Like accents, like a slight accent. Yeah, it's fine. But when it's really, really thick and heavy, and it's just one of those things where it's like I know you're probably not an idiot, but you kind of sound like one. You know.
I love that. Stigma.
And I'm not.
Man.
You see, there you go. I'm joining your hole that you're digging.
Should I just keep going? Should I just
yeah? Just keep going.
All right.
and it's like again, like I'm not saying that you are an idiot or absent-minded or whatever, but it's just it's that unfortunate stereotype that's been associated with it as well, especially in the United States. Like, as soon as you come out with a southern accent, a lot of people automatically, you know. Assume the worst.
Which is funny, because
Like,
if you... In, for example, a lot of shows in England, or BBC, whenever they bring in, like, an American to, like, try and, like, just be an American, they'll give them a Southern accent. And it's just, like, they right, don't necessarily exactly associate the Southern accent with unintelligence in, like, Canada, for example. They just associate it with America. Like, right. That's just what they do.
And it's one of those things where it's, you know, people with that kind of accent are also very outspoken about a lot of things. So usually it's, you know, whoever's the most outspoken is what everyone else assumes that
is correct. That.
Right. Right.
Okay. Interesting. Alrighty.
And that's just, you know, dumb human nature.
Well, that's that for another podcast, I guess. Like,
oh yeah. Yeah. We'll
getting away from that. You seem to be really dedicated to that topic.
I know. It was one of those things where, like, I think we pretty much covered everything as far as, like, Cubs curse-wise, I think.
That was incredibly entertaining. Like, I was sitting here not talking for the vast majority of that, just thinking, like, why are no sports teams in Canada this
interesting? There's so many things, like, the pitching. The pitching from that year, like I said, was probably one of the best in that particular season. And then just how it all collapsed after that game.
Yeah.
In the next seasons, like I told you, all the injuries Mark Pryor had. We had Kerry Wood, who was almost like right there at that level of greatness with Mark Pryor, and he had all these injuries, not quite as much as Mark Pryor, but pretty close. All right after that, we had Carlos Zambrano, who was like our third guy, who was, and all these guys were under 23 years old. So it's like, we are set for a while with these guys. And so Carlos Zambrano, after those other guys kind of, you know, had their injury problems, he became our ace, our main guy. And he had this thing where he just, his anger affected his pitching. I don't know why. he was a good pitcher, but he couldn't control himself. He would get in fights with other players. He would get in fights with his own players. Wow. He got in more fights with his own players than he did with other players. He was a pitcher who he was a great batter, which was really odd for a pitcher.
Yeah, that is
but
kind of strange.
Anytime he struck out, he would take the bat and snap it over his knee. Like, he that kind of guy.
That's terrifying. So, okay, let me just, what I've learned today, this morning, well, it's finally afternoon now, for me. Don't bring a goat to a sports game, otherwise your team will never win ever again, ever.
Yes.
The Cubs are bad for your health.
Very much so.
Mental and physical. And Chicago fans are friendly, but can get insane and want to murder
people. As long as you don't, you know, upset any, or do anything to ruin the game. In their eyes, which is not always, you know, something that you can arbitrarily follow, because you're like, I don't know what will ruin the game until after it happens.
Oh, or look, that wasn't my intention. Look, there's a mob surrounding me. What did I just do?
Right, like it was one of, and again, in Steve Bartman's defense, like there was at least 10 people around him who were doing the same thing. He was just the unlucky one to actually make contact with the ball.
Poor bastard.
You know, and it was one of the things, like, in Wrigley Field, almost more than any other field, it seems like whatever the wind is doing has more effect on the ball than any other stadium.
Hmm.
And I've been to Wrigley Field, and it was the middle of July. I was wearing a regular baseball jersey, a Cubs jersey, and the wind coming in from the outfield, it seems just like cut right through you.
Oh wow!
Like I was in the shade because I had the upper deck above me, and in the shade in July I was shivering.
That's impressive. You know, I mean, that's impressive for the States. In Canada, we're still snowing, so
right.
It's like we get 13 months of winter, so it's fine.
And it's really just all that wind coming off of Lake Michigan, really. And it's just, the point that they made in the documentary is they're saying if the wind was just changed a little bit, this documentary would be about this guy, or it would be about this guy, just if the wind changed that much.
Yeah, it's interesting that it's just that small difference that that wind made, because if it had blown a little less hard or more hard, a little more hard, the next person or the person before him would have caught the ball and the same thing would have happened, and it would have just been awful.
And that was a very interesting part in the documentary. There's a minister who's in Ohio who kind of did research on the whole history of scapegoats, and you know, so she looked pretty hard into the Steve Bartman thing, and she was like, if you think about the history of it, Steve Bartman really was the perfect scapegoat, you know, because the history of it was, you know, back in just very early
come on, Chris, you can do it. Come on.
Like in early Judeo history, like essentially, instead of sacrificing a goat, they would bless a goat, and everyone would essentially place their sins on the goat as they let it out of town. It would yell at it, throw stuff at it, and it would be let out of town. And,
oh, why don't you learn that in school?
And essentially, once they got out of town, they locked the gates and never let the goat back in. Now, I don't know if they killed it after that or what they did with the goat. They just let it out of town, essentially taking all of their sins out of the town. And they're, you know, the goat was just an innocent, peaceful being who really didn't do anything wrong. And that's kind of like what Steve Bartman was. He was just like this really quiet guy. Even when he was being yelled at, he didn't retaliate. He didn't do anything back. He just kind of took it all on and was literally led out of the building.
That's
just for not doing anything wrong, but just because he was attracting the attention. Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's one of those things where, like, the end of it, you feel so sad for the guy. And you kind of feel, like, as a Coast fan, I kind of feel bad. Even though I wasn't there, I didn't really have any part of it. But there was a time where I felt angry towards him, you know, especially when I watched the game live, you know. It's one of those things where it's like, I felt just like those fans did, and I'm not too sure if I would have reacted any different than they would. I probably wouldn't have thrown something, but I might have joined in chanting or something like that.
It's really interesting in the different mentalities, right? Because, like, here you are, you're saying that you would have felt the same way.
Right.
But I don't think I would have... I would have been disappointed, yes, and I would have probably been a little bit like, seriously, dude, you couldn't have given it a couple of seconds. Right. But I don't think... I don't see myself getting angry over that. It's just the mentalities are just. It's
in that moment I would have, you know, joined in on the chanting and yelling and stuff. But as the game wore on and I would see, you know, the Cubs players starting to screw up and give up all these runs, I would have been yelling at the Cubs players.
Yeah.
Myself, and that was the thing. And that's the one really weird thing about it is that no one blamed the Cubs themselves. No one blamed the actual players that were screwing up. Like, I think his name was Alex Gonzalez, that shortstop I was telling you about that missed that double play.
Okay.
He should have been the guy that you yelled at, because after that, that's when everything happened.
The eight innings. Yes, the eight innings in one inning.
That eighth inning where he, you know, missed that double play. He should have been the guy that you yelled at. Mark Pryor should have been the guy that yelled at. The relief pitcher that they brought in after that, who kept giving up runs, he should have been the one that got yelled at. But instead, we took all of that anger from those events and put it all on this innocent fan. And it was just... It's incredibly... it's a weird human study kind of thing. Like, that pack mentality that people have sometimes. Whenever they feel angry and entitled to something and someone ruins that, everyone just kind of turns on that person, no matter what their intent was. So... From what I hear, there was a writer who he wrote for ESPN, I believe, who was given the task of tracking down Steve Bartman. This was back in 2010, 2009, I think. Just tracking him down, seeing, you know, how he's doing, and he literally had to, like, he had to do a lot of investigating. None of his friends none of Steve Bartman's friends would give him up or say anything about him. They're like, just leave him alone. He doesn't want anything, and he doesn't want to do anything with the press or anything like that. And he got to the point where he literally had to. He parked outside of the house he was believed to stay at, and literally the first car that left from that house, he followed, and went to work, and he stayed in that parking garage for like 7 to 8 hours waiting for Steve Bartman to come back. And then, you know, he finally talked to him in that parking garage, and Bartman's like, I'll talk to my legal team, and we'll call you back.
Wow.
And for future references, if you want to interview someone, maybe, you know, hiding out in a parking garage and jumping out isn't a good idea. And he just got in his car and left. And that was all. And again, like, all he didn't have any images, no pictures or anything. Just he had this, his own story that people kind of went off of and kind of assumed that this is what actually happened. Other than that, no one has really seen the guy. And it's one of those things where the only images we have of him is the sweatshirt, the turtleneck, the glasses, the hat, the Walkman.
Yeah.
If he's not wearing that, and it's another point that they made in the documentary, if he's not wearing that, a lot of people wouldn't be able to identify him. And essentially what he's done is he's, you know, changed up his look a little bit. And some people are saying he's gone by a different name. Some people said he moved out of the country, but
he's probably in Canada now. He's probably living up here and just
might be
lounging in the snow.
I just the whole situation that's around that is so bizarre. You know, it is kind of heartbreaking sometimes that he had to go through that.
Yeah. Poor guy. It just,
yeah.
People.
I know, yeah, I know. So, that's the whole Cub story. I know we talked more about Bartman than we did about the
that was more interesting than the goat thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's a goat, and it was 1945. All we had is that was literally, like, that two lines of story. Like, he brought him to the game, they kicked him out, he said, no, you need to let me and my goat in the game. They're like, oh, no.
That's not,
like,
no. Okay,
well, the Cubs ain't gonna win anymore. You know, that's the entire story. Steve Bartman's just so crazy. It's not like there's now, well, I don't know if they still did it, but the seat that he was sitting in that night had a big Cubs sticker on the back of it, so people could either, like, there was some times where people just avoid buying the tickets for that seat.
Mm.
Or, you know, people would make a joke about it and they would come early to the game and pose for pictures in the seat, you know, and mimic, you know, the Bartman reaching out for the ball. Stuff like that. It's kind of weird. I didn't do that. I was actually, whenever I went, I was on the other side of the stadium, so I'd never walked all the way around to do that. It's bizarre, dude.
Yeah, that's crazy. You so, Americans in your sports.
I know. And that's the thing. Like, baseball isn't even our main sport. Like,
it was at one point.
It was. And then, well, the strike in the 90s really hurt them a lot. Kind of came back a little bit during the big home run race in 98, I believe, between Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa.
Then that brought a lot of people back. Didn't it go to, like, basketball then, and now it's football? I don't know. There's a transition somewhere.
It was, well, I mean, with Michael Jordan, it essentially went to basketball while he was there, and then when he left, everything went to football, and it's pretty much stayed in football.
Although college basketball is pretty huge.
It is, and we're actually right in the middle of the big NCAA tournament.
I'm well aware.
Yeah,
I know you're probably
inundated with it. Yeah, it's pretty insane down here. I don't really get into it that much anymore. I used to be bigger into it when I was younger. I do my predictions on my little brackets, and then I just leave it at that, and I just kind of casually follow it from there.
Yeah.
But yeah, football for me is probably like my main sport. Like, I love football.
Curling.
I do. I can't even lie. I dig curling something vicious. Like, curling is fun.
I feel like such a failure. I didn't follow the Brier at all this year. I was working every single day during the Brier.
You didn't follow the what?
The Brier, the massive curling tournament that happens every year.
I only follow it when it's on the Olympics.
Oh, that's
because that's the only time we ever. That's the only time we ever see it here in the
States.
To be
okay.
Honest with you. Yeah.
Okay.
Only
then,
time we ever
fair.
See it.
There's that's a whole other show. There's, I can, like, talk about curling.
Right. And, like, there's a bunch of sports I only really pay attention to because of the Olympics. It's because, again, like, it's the only time. Like, if you really think about it, there's so many sports in the Olympics that's essentially a different form of soccer. You know, there's well, there's soccer. Then there is water polo, which is water soccer with your hands. And then there's handball, which is soccer with your hands. You know, and I'm pretty sure there's some others that I'm forgetting.
But I really only follow the Winter Olympics.
Winter Olympics is so much more
fun. That's mainly because I'm Canadian, and we don't do well in the Summer Olympics.
Right, but the Winter Olympics, you guys clean house.
Yeah, we do. Like, we got curling.
U.S. kind of goes back and forth. Like, Summer Olympics is our main focus, but we pulled decent numbers from winter. But, you know, usually hockey, there's almost no chance.
Well, like, in Winter Olympics, we got all my favorite ones. We got curling, we got bobsledding, skeleton, speed skating's thrilling to watch. Like, the
It is.
They're crazy. Plus, I mean, I gotta have the sense of pride. My cousin brought home the bronze medal for bobsledding in 2010 in Vancouver.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome, dude.
Yeah. So, alright, yeah.
I don't know anyone that was in the Olympics. Sad face. What is it, the cross-country skiing and then they shoot something?
Oh, wow.
Essentially,
One sec.
Drive-bys on skis.
Is it called a... It's a type of biathlon.
Is it like... No.
It's a type of biathlon.
Right.
I think there's a name before that.
I don't know. And I'm pretty sure whoever's listening to us is probably like yelling games.
Probably.
At their computer.
Freaking
right
out at us being like, how can't you know this?
But I kind of dig that because, you know, it's... I mean, it's... It's a lot better than watching people try to, you know,
run cross-country skiing. My after work last night, I hopped on a bus and headed home, and my friend walked home. And he sends me a text partway from it and says, so on my walk home, there's a guy cross-country skiing on the sidewalk. That's the amount of snowfall we got in the last 24 hours.
Yeah, like, you show me the snow out of your window, and that's... Yeah. Dude, I'm telling you, if that volume of snow fell here, we would be shut down for months. We would be well into the summer. We're still shut down from all the snow.
It's just really funny because our airport's still going hard. Like, we haven't canceled like next to any flights.
We cancel school if the weather report says there's going to be an inch of snow the next day.
So
they go ahead and cancel everything.
We were talking about this at work. We were talking about why we don't have snow days in Alberta. Other provinces frequently get snow days, but like in it's set up school district by school district. In the school district I grew up and went to school in, it was something. The rules were ridiculous. Like, it did not matter how much snow was on the ground, you come to school.
Right.
If the weather is, like, negative 45 without a wind chill, or negative 60 or something with a wind chill, then school is canceled. And that's...
And for our American friends, he was talking in Celsius terms.
So about,
negative... We had this discussion before we went on the air.
Yeah. Do I still have it open?
I don't know.
Yes, I do.
I know you have your conversion thing. Because I was sitting here complaining that it was 32 degrees Fahrenheit here in Greensboro.
Okay, so it'd be canceled. Oh, whoops, I messed that up. It would be canceled at negative 49 degrees Fahrenheit without a wind chill, and with a wind chill, it would be canceled at, this will be fun, negative 76 Fahrenheit.
Oof.
Yeah, that's my school district I grew up in.
Oof. Dear Lord, sir.
Yeah.
That's unbearable.
On that note, looks like we're out of time, or at our time.
Yeah, we're pretty close to it. So we're... Hopefully we'll be back next week.
Sports complained about the weather. We sound like real human beings or something.
I know, right?
Man.
So we hope you guys enjoyed. Nathan, why don't you, tell them where they can follow you on Twitter.
Follow me on Twitter at Nate, NAIT93. Yeah, that's all I got. I got Twitter.
Yeah, I got a Twitter as well, and mine is at CW Sanders, that's CWSANDERS39. follow me on there for hilarity, where I usually complain a lot.
A lot.
A lot. And be sure to catch me on our wrestling podcast. Me and our friend Joel, we have a little wrestling podcast called Classy Ring Attire, which you can find on iTunes, a place where hopefully you will be able to find hat shorts. You know, we hopefully be on iTunes here soon. So yeah, catch us on there. And in a couple episodes, we're going to have Nathan on.
It's going to be a crossover of lots of crossover. Geeky wrestling talk.
Exactly. So until next time, you know, just if you want to send us some ideas on what you think we should discuss here on the show, send it to either one of our Twitter accounts, and we'll gladly
maybe we'll open oblige. Up a Gmail for hat shorts. You can get fans contacting us that way.
If you want to, fine. I got enough emails to deal with. All right. So on that note, this has been America's Hat.
This has been Canada Shorts.
See you next time.
Bye.